welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges as he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here with you, and I want to welcome all our listeners out there who regularly check in on the next chapter with Charlie. This is the show where we sort of deconstruct ideas that you may be thinking or practices you may be using that can help you move to the next chapter in your life. And today, my guest is our good friend who hasn't been on the show for a while, is Terry Hershey. If you are a frequent listener, then you're already familiar with Terry. If not, Terry is a prolific writer. How many books, Terry?
I've written 47, but I've only published 16.
But you've written 47.
Haven't we all? Any writer has written it that much, I hope.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
You keep writing, man.
Yeah, that is amazing. No, I have not written 47 books. I'm an essay writer. You know, I'm a sprinter. I'm not a long-distance runner. So I get it. I get, you know, what it takes you a book to say. It takes me about 800 words.
Yeah.
besides being a writer, Terry's a very popular conference keynote speaker, renowned landscape architect, and oftentimes spiritual advisor. At least he is with me. I don't know if you are with anybody else. Today, I want to chat to you with you, Terry, about a quote I read in Brain Pickings. You know, Maria Popova's great Sunday blog. If you don't get it, you got to check it out, because she reviews three books every week, and they're just tremendous. And this one, there was a quote from Epicurus. Now, in Epicurus language, when was Epicurus? Was he about the turn of the century, about the time of Christ, right?
He was
turn of BC,
turn of AD.
Turn of AD, yeah. And he wrote this: the fool, with all his other faults, has this also: he is always getting ready to live. And the inference is that we're spending more time getting ready to live than actually living. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the modern version, Paul Tournier, I don't know if you know that name. But
yeah, of course.
Yeah, psychologist, psychiatrist from, he's Swiss, but he said most of us spend our entire life indefinitely preparing to live.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's the modern version of the Epicurus quote.
And so help me now. As I read that, I just said, gee, that is the greatest quote. And then I started thinking about it, and I said to myself, what does that mean? What does getting prepared to live mean? Is that going to school?
That means that you need closure, or you need to check something off before you commit to something emotionally with your heart.
What would be the type of things you check off?
I'm not ready to give my opinion here. I'm not ready to be myself here. I'm not ready to step out here. I'm not ready to wade in. See, that's the amazing thing. So this is interesting. So right now in our country, I don't know when you're going to air this, but right now in our country, we have several natural disasters going on.
Right.
Houston, about to be Florida. In my neck of the woods, there are 90 wildfires. In California, there's some. In Montana, there's some. That's the irony of a natural disaster. There's no waiting anymore.
Yes.
This is it. This is the moment. You do what you do.
And you're fully alive at that moment.
Well, and I don't know if you're fully alive, but you're definitely fully present.
Okay, that's what I meant. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. You're fully present. The future or the past don't make a difference.
Nothing makes a difference in this moment. That's the irony of a catastrophe, is that you're here right now. And definitely preparing to live is making the list of what I will take out of my house when the floodwaters come.
That's a great illustration.
Living is leaving the house.
One thing about leaving the house and living, as we baby boomers get older, the act of living becomes much more of a reality than getting prepared to live. Tell me that story that you said before the air about the cancer person.
Oh, right. Well, no, but I had just read a book. Well, I've been interviewed about an event I'm doing for media in Ohio. And then after the interview, I mean, we're talking, and then after the interview, we're chatting about just stuff, personal stuff. And she asked me what book I was reading, and I told her I was reading a book about what death can teach us about living. And she said, well, that's interesting. My dad's just been diagnosed with brain cancer, and I'm thinking, and she tells me the story, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking that's a bummer, and I'm thinking, I told her that he could be buddies with John McCain, and she laughed because John McCain has brain cancer. But I'm thinking in my head, John McCain, I'm thinking somebody who's up in years, you know. And this is what happens when you're up in years. See, we think we do that in terms of preparing to live. We think catastrophes happen when you're up in years. And then she tells me her dad is 61. 61.
And how old are you?
I'm about to be 63, but...
So you're up in years.
I'm what you call up in years.
I'm a bit upper.
All I know is that now at this age, I get a discount at the theater here in town on Vashon.
One of my favorite moments was when you turned 50 at some places and... Or was it 60? No, it was 50. And they gave you, movie theaters at that time gave you senior discounts at 50. And I got a senior discount and my son got a junior discount. So that tells you that how old I was when I had Austin.
Wow.
We both got discounted, yeah, in probably more ways than one.
Yeah.
But... I'm thinking as we get older that the idea of preparing to live is not anywhere near as important as actually living. I mean, I make plans. My preparing to live is making plans of what I'm going to do this year and then actually doing them.
The way preparing to live is framed in terms of how we approach life is the whole idea of a bucket list. And we always say, you know, what's your bucket list? What would you like to do before? And two things about that. One is we assume that the before is that death is the end of it. That's the interesting thing about this book I read. But that's another subject.
Which we will get on because
I mean, the bucket list is the assumption is heretofore I haven't lived fully, but the bucket list, and I get it. I get part of that. We all have a bucket list. What was the movie they made about that?
Called The Bucket List with, wasn't it, De Niro and Morgan Freeman?
Yeah. So the whole point, the assumption is with the bucket list, then, you know, I can jump out of a plane or whatever I'm going to do with my bucket list.
And the question is, let me ask a question. After you have done one of your bucket items, do you feel any better than you just checked off a thing on your list? Was it actually that worth it?
Well, I think the reframe there is, feel, but I don't mean emotionally feel. I just my question is, were you there? If you were there, then every bit of it was worth it. Were you there when you jumped out of a plane? Fine. But were you there when your grandchild came up to you and wanted a hug? I don't see a difference. Were you there?
Yeah, exactly. Now, maybe jumping out of a plane is not the best reason, because it's sort of like a catastrophe in that you have to be there because there is danger, but
or even if you do an easy one. I went to Venice. I mean, you can
say
look
Venice.
Look at all the wonderful things that you have done in Europe. Okay, that's my bucket list. I went to one of the I saw the Northern Lights. You can relate to that.
Okay, take that as that's a perfect example. So the Northern Lights, I'm preparing to go to the Northern Lights. Either I go there with the attitude that, oh, I saw the Northern Lights. I saw the Northern Lights, and I checked off the Northern Lights. And that was all that was on my mind, was that I saw the Northern Lights. What was for me was the experience of Northern Lights, the transformation, the movement from one world to another world. It was so we can prepare to live, and we can have all these things that we prepared. We can have our bucket list. But the question is, are you there when you're doing that item on your list?
Yeah, so this was, it was actually an educational, transformational experience for you. While it was a bucket list, when you were there, you reframed it as just living, and that was good. And the point is that you take that reframe back into whatever you do. If you're ordering coffee at Starbucks down the road in Tustin,
yeah. And I even make that as fast as possible. I use my mobile app, so I don't have to be there.
I need to use a different metaphor for Orange County people. I just don't.
Yeah, I use my mobile app, go in and pick up my car. I don't even turn off my car.
You guys are scary. See, there's the... Yeah. If you guys want to live, you got to get out of your cars.
Well, I do. I don't waste the time of sitting in line in my car.
I wrote in my Sabbath moment that one of the best things about the eclipse 3 weeks ago or whatever it was that several million young people actually got outside.
Got away from from some video game, which is their form of actually living. You know, you speak of I have to be careful that I don't start talking about this on every podcast, but, you know, I just returned from Uganda, and I could have, and I went there just to visit some of the water wells we had dug, and just to go with the people. I really had little expectation. I had no idea that I was fully into the situation, which you can't help but be when you're in a third world country. And I'm a changed person, Terry. I mean, I'm a changed person. I was so there that it remains with me. We'll see how long it lasts. You know, I'm such a change-oriented person, but I do feel as if it will last a good while. That was from the act of truly being there and truly experiencing it and feeling the people, feeling the need and the love of the people.
Phrase fully in explains it.
You have to tell me before we go much further, because you wrote in your Sabbath moment last week, which I read, and you wrote about the five invitations, and then you kind of went on, but didn't tell us what the five invitations were, what you learned from getting ready for death.
The first one's don't wait.
Don't wait, just die?
Yeah, don't wait to do whatever you're going to do. I mean, why are you waiting?
Oh, okay.
Tell me why you're waiting.
I can't on the air.
Yeah, man, that's the whole point. Why are you waiting? Tell me why you're waiting.
Yeah, and there's always the excuse that I don't have the funds. I don't have the resources to do it.
Well, yeah, okay, then do something that doesn't take the risk. I mean, I get that, and I hear that, and I understand it viscerally. Why is it that all the great things I want to say about somebody, I say them at their funeral?
Yeah, we can tell people we can't use all the words, but I've told you because you're going to preside at my funeral, I figure I'm going to die before you do. The one thing that I want you to open with, your opening line, so everybody knows the opening line and my eulogy at my funeral was, Charlie said, "Don't make me sound like a freaking saint," which you said, "That will be no problem at all."
That won't be an issue, dude.
but that is what happens at funerals, is it not?
And that's a corollary to this whole subject.
Yes.
Is because we're not sure if we lived or not, we need someone to make it sound like we did.
Oh God, that's a great quote, Terry. You could write a book on that one. And before we even go into it further, I would just signal it's time. Yeah, it's time for a break. We go quickly, so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have my friend and special guest, Terry Hershey, with me, and we're talking about a quote from Epicurus, which is basically talking about the difference between preparing to live and living. And Epicurus says, the greatest mistake the fool makes is preparing to live, and we're talking about not preparing to live, but to live. And you just gave us a great quote, Terry, that Paul and I were talking at the break. And can you repeat that quote for me?
I can't.
I know.
But tell me what it was.
Paul, tell me what it was. Oh, no, I remember what it was. It was that we were talking about funerals and that we need people to tell us what a good life we had. To assure us.
Assure us is the right word, yeah.
Yeah, and why the heck is that? Comparison?
No, we've been conned that messiness is somehow the antithesis of a good life. I told you, I read you the other day the best obituary I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh yes, that was because it was so truthful. That was what got us on obituary. Somebody, don't make me sound like a saint.
He was this, but he was. Here, it's on my desk. You ready?
Yeah.
A lot of people had mixed feelings for Ken. He was a great hard worker, a great friend, a caring brother, a loving father, a math whiz, and a giant pain in your ass with a few demons to boot. Unfortunately, life isn't always rainbows and unicorns. Long ago, we lost the version of Ken we had expected to have. It is no big secret that he suffered heavily from substance abuse. But the diminished version of Ken that we were left with was a quiet and gentle soul.
That's truthful. That's a real eulogy. That what people are really like.
Yeah, there's a Hebrew word called anava. I don't know it a little bit. Anava.
They translate
humility in the Old Testament, but it means. To be at home in your skin is what it means.
Yes, which is a very big deal to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be in your skin. I mean, if you're fighting the need to be out of your skin or the need to impress or the need to hurt or the need to whatever, then you're in a different place.
You know, I have two ways that I want to go right now, but first I want to... Let's go over these five, because I like these five. And it comes from the book that's titled, that's a question.
What, the book I just read?
Yeah, on the five invitations.
Yeah.
Is that just the title, the five invitations?
The five invitations, discovering what death can teach us about living fully.
Okay, first one is don't wait.
Yeah.
Second one?
Push nothing away.
Push nothing away. Help me.
The 61-year-old man just told you, you got brain cancer. Don't push it away.
Accept it.
Not accept it. It's not about accept. It's just live. I mean, this is it. This is. I choose now. I make choices based upon this. That's like saying there's a hurricane coming. Okay. I can choose to live with the hurricane coming or not choose to live with the hurricane coming. I don't accept it or not accept it. It doesn't really matter what I do about accepting. It's a hurricane.
Okay. Number three.
Don't push it away. In other words, let yourself be present to make choices now.
Okay, don't. I like that. I can really get that. Don't push it away. Let yourself be present. So
right.
don't wait. Do it now. Stay present. Stay in the moment.
I mean, a lot of the do it now is, let's just paraphrase that, because a lot of people who want to do it now is they're doing shit that crazy stuff, which is fine with me, but some of the stuff I'm doing has nothing to do with who I am. I just wanted to do it to impress somebody.
Now, okay. Boy, we're going to switch all over the place here, but I don't mind rambling. I don't mind. It's a conversation.
Your subject living now,
in preparing to live, is that not preparing to live if you are getting ready for something? Are we not preparing to live if we're getting ready? Let's say, you know what comes to my mind first, really, when I think of getting ready to live? I'm thinking of education of all kinds. I don't think formal and informal education.
Wait till I graduate.
When I graduate, it's the when I graduate, when I get married, when I get divorced, when I get some money, when I get my new car, which I've already figured out what new car I want. I've already prepared for that. That's what I'm thinking of, is getting ready. Now, there is nothing wrong with any one of those things. Those are all good things, as long as while we are doing them, we are in that moment.
Yeah,
we're fully in it.
I don't think I'm getting ready. I mean, I think I'm educating, but there's nothing getting ready. I may not finish. I may die. There's lots of things that may happen to me. There's nothing going to be different per se, other than my job might be different when I get out of there.
But I'm still going to be me.
I'm just saying, okay, fine. Several years from now, I'll have a degree. Okay, fine. Remember the Harrison Ford movie regarding Henry? Do you remember that movie?
Yes, I do. Isn't that where he was really bright and then he...
Not just bright. He was bright on the top of his game. He was a lawyer, but he was a SOB. This is way back in the 90s, I think, early 90s.
Way back in the 90s. That hurts.
It was like 30 years ago.
20.
90s is 30 years ago.
Is it? It is 30 years ago. Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. That's just...
So Harrison Ford is this lawyer, but he's shot. It's a random accident he's shot. So after, when he's rehabilitating, because it affects him, because he's not the same. And all of the people he worked with want him to be his old self again, who was an absolute not fun person. But they need him to be that so he can be, quote, successful again. And the guy who does his rehabilitation, his physical therapist, yeah, I don't remember his name, Bradley or something. Anyway, I remember he says to him, I thought I could go back to my life, but I didn't like who I was. I don't fit in.
So he recognized that after the accident.
Yeah, and so this physical therapist, I mean, he says to him, you know what, I got bad knees. Football wrecked both my knees, college football. And that was my life. There was nothing else. That was it. No shit. The safety hit me, you know. The game is over. My life is over. Now ask me if I mind having bad knees. No way. I had to find my life. He said, don't listen to nobody trying to tell you who you are.
Right. And that, but that is, you know, that's Terry, that's a question that I've wrestled with, and I've really finally come to resolution. It's taken until I'm almost 68, but because I'm still 67, I still have, what day is it today? The 6th. I still have 10 days of being 67. The process of figuring that out, I forgot my question. So, which is telling you that I probably am 68.
Yeah.
So instead of that question, I'm going to move back, and I want you to quickly, because we'll have two subjects here, but I've got to hear the other three of the five invitations. So let's just go through them in a couple of minutes.
The third one is something we've already talked about, which is bring your whole self to the experience. I mean, don't hold back what you're feeling.
Okay.
bring yourself to it. I mean, if we put a moral price tag on what we're feeling, we've missed it. If we apologize, we bring a moral price tag to it. And the fourth one is find a place of rest in the middle of things, which is my mantra.
Kind of a sanctuary?
Yeah, my mantra.
Right.
Just honor the need to nourish yourself. And the fifth one is cultivate the don't know mind. In other words, I don't need to have the answer here. The answer is not the end all and be all. It's okay to say, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yes. Yes. It's funny that I've begun using that a whole lot more when people ask me something rather than ask me a question that I'm not really familiar with, but have vague familiarity. You know, I'll try to act like minor expert or like I know what I'm talking. That's the historical me. The new me is, I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't have any idea on that. So, you know, if you want to tell me what you think, that's great, but I don't really have thoughts on the subject.
Right.
Okay, those are truly five great ways to live a wonderful life. Don't wait. Live in the moment. Now the other three, I changed the second one. Don't push away to live in the moment.
Don't push away. I mean, that's a crucial one because don't worry about the messiness. I mean, that's like...
Okay, yeah.
Just because it's ugly doesn't mean it's bad.
Okay, got it. Third one?
Bring your whole self.
Bring your whole self. Fourth one is...
Find a place of rest.
Find the place of rest. And the fifth one is...
Don't worry about saying you don't know.
Oh, man. You know, what a great life. One of the things we were talking about is that you had mentioned at some time about living, you didn't use the word authentically, but living according to who you really are.
In your own skin.
In your own skin, being in your own skin. The problem until, and that's where I lost my question at 68, I have finally figured out who I am. Now I'm evolving, and in 10 years that could be somebody different. Or not wholly different. There could be some different attributes to it. But I would say
you haven't figured out who you are finally. You're able to enjoy it more, who you are. You've always been who you are. You just haven't enjoyed as much.
But I haven't been aware of it, I don't think.
Well, that's fine. But it's not about figuring it out. It's not a contest. You don't get a prize for figuring it out earlier.
Wait a minute. There's no prize.
Yeah,
I don't get anything. I'm not going to win.
The point.
I'm not going to win the lottery or something now.
I mean, that's the whole deal. Is why? So why feel bad about it? If you figured it out, I mean, you should be grateful and enjoy it.
Oh.
Why do we have to think? Oh my God! It should have been 10. Well, as soon as you think that way, then the game is over anyway.
Yeah, I made it really easy. Finally made it really easy. I made it really easy about 10 years ago, but it took me about 10 years to actually believe that I made it really easy. And that is simply what excites me and what do I love to do? And just, you know, and I wrote down, as I wrote down the list, I came up with three categories of I love to learn, so it's experiencing things. I love to create, so it's creating. And I am a servant. I love to help people. I love to do...
Yeah, so I would say with regard to the first two, the third one, because I know you, is now, because given the first two, what? How does that make my world bigger, which is the third one?
Oh, makes my... Yes, it does. It makes my world bigger.
It does make your world bigger. You're connected with people you wouldn't have been connected with before. You're involved with making their world a better place. I mean, it's all...
Yeah, it's not because the first two were all about me.
Yeah, we're not myopic. You can't be myopic. I mean, you're connected in a bigger way.
Yes, and there is really nothing like being connected. What minor... There's a wonderful story that I heard that I really liked, and it's a story of a... And we may have even told on the podcast, but I can never remember. A forest fire. And all of the animals rushed to the top of the hill because there were no trees on the hill, and they knew they would be safe. But they saw, in the distance, they saw a tiny light. You may have even told me this story. They saw a tiny light going from the lake back to the fire, from the lake going back to the fire. And they had no idea what this was, so they sent the eagle out to find out what this was, and it turned out to be a hummingbird. And it was a hummingbird that would fill his beak with water and go out and drop it on the fire. And the eagle said, "What a fool you are. You can't put out that fire." And he says, "I know, but I know one thing. I can do what I can, and this is what I can do."
That's a great story. I didn't tell you that story, but that's a great story.
Isn't it?
I will use that story and not give you credit, but that's a great story. Just so you know.
Well, you could say I heard the story from my friend. Don't use my name.
That's a great story.
Yeah, but that is what that is all about living.
The hummingbird is not worried about judging whether his life is of value or whether he measures up to whomever or whatever. He's in his own skin.
You know, that's probably, boy, you really hit on something there, and that's probably about this preparing to live is the whole idea of measurement and comparison. How do we measure up in comparison to what is expected of us from other people, and how do we compare to other people, rather than simply accepting who we are, enjoying that, and taking advantage of it?
Embracing it, leveraging it, yeah.
Let's wrap it up with this. A new subject has really entered into me, and that is building a legacy, and that in the Talmud, which, you know, the Jewish Bible is the Torah, and the Talmud is a commentary on the Torah. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so in the Talmud, it says there are only two things a man needs to do to have a legacy, to have his life go on forever. He needs to have a son, and he needs to plant a tree.
I did not know that sentence.
Yeah. Have a son so your name goes on, and if you don't have a son...
Oh, I see.
Your name goes on, and plant a tree. You have done something that's impacted the planet for hundreds of years.
I would change that now, but yeah.
How would you change it?
Yeah, I have a daughter or a son.
I agree.
But you and I both have one son, so it's okay for us, but I agree. Daughter, son works for me.
Have a child. But then, for me, the big thing is... plant a tree. And we plant our trees when we leave our imprint on the planet. You know, you leave your imprint every time you do a lecture, every time you write a book, every time you talk to somebody, every time you're doing a podcast, you're leaving an imprint of yourself
impacting other people. Is you're not leaving an imprint because you think you're leaving an imprint. My main man that I studied architecture under was the man who designed the Central Park.
Oh, Olmsted.
Yeah. That was his first landscape design.
I know.
His first.
With Central Park, I know.
Central Park. And the whole point of the design was that so people 100 years after him could enjoy it. Now, the whole point of that was not that he was going to leverage the 100-year thing, but he was going to give himself so fully to the project that the seed would be planted, that it would spill, that it would go beyond him.
Yes, and that's what legacy is all about. Legacy is not about my name involved, but my actions that impact other people. And then whether my name is involved or not, my imprint is on it. When I dig a well that will serve 1,000 people give 1,000 people clean water for 25 years, I don't care whether my name is on the well or not. It doesn't make a difference. I just know there's something I've done that I know inside of me that's helping 1,000 people for 25 years.
I would say the very fact that you don't want your name on it means that it's a good thing.
It's like the churches that have their people's names plaques all over them. It's it's it, the great pledges.
You know, we were having a really good time until you mentioned that.
Until I mentioned church. Especially the church that you were at has people's names all over the place because you were at the Crystal
Lord.
Cathedral.
Oh, my Lord. Names plastered everywhere.
I've got my final words. Why don't you say, what are your final words? How would you help our audience in living versus preparing to live? What would be your words?
And the interview I had today with whatever the media was in Ohio, she said, what's the paradigm shift for you? And I said, you know, it's interesting because I said I moved from Orange County, California, which you're aware of, to my island. She said, what's the difference? I said, in Orange County, the first question they asked me was where I work. And the second question they asked me was where I lived. Now, this is not a statement about Orange County.
Yes.
But that's the truth. She said, well, what do they ask you where you live now? They say, what vegetables are you harvesting in your garden?
Yeah.
That's why I changed. I mean, I'll be glad to talk about where I work. I'll be glad to talk about where I live. But right now, it matters to me that I'm going to go pick tomatoes for my dinner tonight and onions and beans and whatever else is ripe. What matters is this moment of this life.
Aren't those the first two questions that are ever ask us when we meet somebody, how are you, which they really don't.
I said Orange County, but what I meant was the United States.
Yeah, yeah. So it's how are you, which no one really cares. It's the stupidest opening. It's just, I'm fine, how are you? But then the next one is, what do you do? And they want to know.
So why
and
not?
And
why
somehow,
not
somehow you're put on this evaluative scale, and all of a sudden you find a way to upgrade the way you make a living. Some way you find a way to make it sound better than it really is.
Yeah, that's a good sentence. Yeah, I ask people, tell me what made you smile today. Tell me what gave you life today. Tell me what. I mean, there's all kinds of things we can ask people about your question, living life today.
You know, I was at an event that was, at the time, it was 30 years ago. It was in the 90s. I can't believe that was 30 years ago. But it was at the retirement party for the president of Taco Bell. Now, he was, at that time, Taco Bell was the company in Orange County. It was one of the companies, one of the top five companies in Orange County. And there were nothing at the party. I don't know how I got invited, because at the party was nothing but rich people. When I say rich people, I mean people that own 2 and 3 multimillion-dollar houses. I mean, they're very rich. And you know the two things that were never discussed at that party? No one asked anyone, what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
Because they didn't care. Everybody did something decent for a living, and nobody asked anybody, how much did something cost? Or if you went on a vacation, what did that cost? And that's always, you know, how much was that? Those were just never questions. And so they were always, believe it or not, with the extremely rich, they were always in-depth questions. They're questions about the quality of your life, not the quantity of your life, because they already, since they had it, they already assumed the quantity of your life. They assumed, even though I was just barely a consultant at the time, they assumed that I was something I was not, and so we got to talk about something really interesting. And we got to talk about living and not about false results of living.
Yeah.
So I'd like to wrap it up with saying, and we were talking about the fool spends his time preparing to live, and you were saying, we are saying, there's nothing wrong with preparing to live. There's nothing wrong with our bucket list. There's nothing wrong with education as long as we are fully engaged in that moment. And then that is living during that time. So the preparing to live, there's even a full engagement in that preparation. Would you not agree with that?
Yeah.
That's what we have to say today is fully live no matter where you are, what you're doing. Be fully involved in it, and watch how much easier and more fun your life is. This is Charlie Hedges. You're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and we welcome you this week and next week. Tune in. Bye for now.